This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We need to tell the world that in any country where people go hungry to the state of even dying, severe food insecurity, acute food insecurity, it is immoral. It is unacceptable.
That's Agnes Kirabo, head of Uganda's Food Rights Alliance, on the expansion of hunger around the world. Details coming up. Also, a Somali official reports heavy casualties in after an attack by Al-Shabaab. And Nigerian police are warning people to be vigilant ahead of Monday's presidential inauguration. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigeria's president-elect, 70-year-old Bola Tinubu, won the presidency of Africa's most populous nation with 8.8 million votes, according to final election results. Despite lingering questions about his health and past corruption allegations, the two-time Lagos governor will succeed President Muhammadu Buhari on Monday when he is sworn in. Earlier today, I spoke with the VOA House of Service Abuja Bureau Coordinator, Medina Dauda, about the preparations for the inauguration and the mood of the country regarding the changing of the guard.
I will not want to say the entire nation, yes, but the Federal Capital Territory of Nigeria is wearing a new look entirely. Everywhere is being painted, flowers are being put on trees. It's looking so beautiful. Everyone that comes as a stranger will know that something remarkable is going to happen. The government is ready for all of this.
How about the mood of the people?
Well, the mood of the people are happy seeing something happening. People are really happy that there's going to be a change in government.
You know, Monday, the ceremony is important not just for the ruling party, but also for the people of Nigeria, because it will pave the way for the incoming administration of the president-elect. But there is a court case still not resolved. Should the swearing-in go on while the court case is still pending?
Yes, the swearing-in will still go on even with the court cases pending. If you remember what happened in 2003, 2007, and even 2011, when the outgoing president, Muhammadu Buhari, attempted to be president three times, and three times he failed. He took 50 months of going to court to challenge the government that was sworn in. So it is a constitutional thing for this country that so long as elections held and somebody was proclaimed a winner, that swearing in must take place. But again, it will not stop the constitutional aspect also that gave all the opposition the right to challenge this victory in court.
Buhari steps down next week. Many are saying he'll be leaving Nigerians less secure, poorer, and more in debt than when he came to office in 2015. Because when he came to office, he was riding a wave of optimism that change was possible. He was supported by a powerful coalition and had the reputation of being a hard man soldier who would get things done. Did he get things done in the last 8 years?
There is no government that will come to power that may not change one or two things, even if we don't see it. Of course, government is a continuum, yes. Agreed that analysts are saying, even though he met a country in total insecurity, because when he came, people hardly go to church, people hardly go to mosque, because bombs were being detonated in prayer places, in the markets, in the motor parks. Now that has reduced. Analysts are giving him a pass mark in that aspect. He has actually tamed the major one, which is the Boko Haram.
Something positive. So let's go on. Let's talk about Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu. He's believed to be one of Nigeria's richest politicians, and he will be sworn in on Monday.
From what we saw of his handiwork when he was the governor of Lagos State, so many positive things happened in Lagos State that Lagos has become one state that can depend on itself, even without government revenue going into their purse. To rule a state is different from ruling the country. Agreed that everybody who wants to contest as president and eventually wins will be given the chance to rule the country so that we see what that person can do. What kind of change will he bring to the country? How would the economy be during his tenure? How would the insecurity be during his tenure? Everyone is hoping that there will be a change. So Nigerians are full of hope. They want this present government to go. People are tired. They want to see a change. They hope that Tinubu and his vice, Kashim Shettima, will bring change and succor to Nigerians when they take over from Monday.
That's correspondent Medina Dauda. She spoke with me from Abuja, Nigeria. In more news from Nigeria, the country's Department of State Service is warning citizens to be vigilant after the secret police said it had uncovered plots to disrupt the inauguration of President-elect Bola Tinubu on Monday. As we reported, the Electoral Commission declared Tinubu the winner of February's presidential election, but opposition parties are challenging the outcome in court. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The secret police said Thursday that, quote, subversive elements, end quote, are trying to undermine efforts to maintain peace and order during the inauguration on Monday. It is not the first time the DSS has warned of threats since the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, declared Bola Tinubu the winner. The DSS advised citizens to follow security protocols and said news media should avoid reports that could heighten tensions. Some election observers have said the February polls lacked credibility and fell short of voter expectations. At least 20 people died in election-related violence, and there were allegations of voter suppression and vote-counting manipulation. On Friday, a coalition of civil society groups protested in the capital, Abuja, calling authorities to suspend the inauguration. Zari Yusuf is a co-convener of the Free Nigeria Movement.
Whoever it is that claims to be the winner is a product of unconstitutionality, and even by the standard of INEC itself, has not actually met the requirement. In the first place, pronouncing him a winner should not have been. INEC has practically failed. Even the president has not upheld what we had hoped he would, the legacy of leaving a credible election. This is just a sham.
Tinubu is a member of the All Progressives Party, the same party as departing President Muhammadu Buhari. Several opposition politicians are challenging the election in court, including the major candidates, the People's Democratic Party's Atiku Abubakar and Labour Party's Peter Obi. But Nigerian authorities say the inauguration cannot be stopped. Adam Ogomogo Mabo is a regional youth leader of the ruling All Progressives Congress. He led Tinubu's supporters in a counter-protest in Abuja.
The election is free and fair. Why some will say it's not free and fair? In election is that when your supporters lose, those who lose will say it's not free and fair. Why those who win the process will say it's free and fair? As far as the Independent Electoral Commission that's been empowered by constitutionally to conduct election and declare winner, has declared Ahmed Bola Tinubu. That is finance.
Nigeria is struggling to stem numerous security problems, including kidnap for ransom gangs. The country's economy is also declining. Many citizens will be hoping the new leader addresses these issues. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A new report by the Ugandan Human Rights Commission details that more than 2,200 people have died of hunger in the eastern part of Uganda. The government rights body says the deaths occurred because of prolonged drought and cattle raiding in the area. Reporter Mugume Davis Ruakaringi has more from Kampala.
The 2022 report released this month by the Uganda Human Rights Commission says at least 2,200 people died of hunger in the region of Kalamoja. Ruth Sechindi, the director for monitoring and inspections, says famine in the area was mainly caused by prolonged droughts in the area.
Those were mainly single mothers, child-headed homes, We noted that the elderly were greatly affected, and there was really survival for all, for the fittest, sorry. And the statistics were really disheartening when the district sent in the reports based on the people who had died.
At least 40% of the population in the Karamoja region, or some 500,000 people, were facing high levels of acute food insecurity according to the 2022 Integrated Food Security Phase classification.
Notice that some of them were eating the residues from the brew. So, and they were, children were also malnourished. So others may not have died because of hunger per se, but hunger-related illnesses. Due to lack of proper nutrition, it led to their bodies giving way.
Agnes Chirabo is the head of Food Rights Alliance, a food and nutrition watchdog in Uganda. She calls the findings, in two quotes, embarrassing, that millions of people in the country perennially suffer from acute food insecurity. She says food production in the country has greatly collapsed, partly because of the effects of COVID-19 and unstable weather patterns.
We need to tell the world that in any country where people go hungry to the state of even dying, severe food insecurity, acute food insecurity, it is immoral. It is unacceptable for any establishment where the household, the basic you could give you, your member of the family as a household lead, as a household head, is the food.
Another cause of famine in the region is constant cattle raiding, which disrupts farming and deprives families of their livestock. Both Chirabo and Sechindi say the government must plan to quickly address the millions of people that face starvation in the country. They say the government has to find ways of mechanized production to ensure stable and constant food production. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Swuhibi in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia today attacked a military base housing Ugandan forces of the African Union peacekeeping mission. Al-Shabaab is fighting to topple Somalia's government and establish its own rule based on a strict interpretation of Islamic law. The militants attacked the base belonging to the African Union transition mission in Somalia, known as ATMIS, in Bala Marar. Residents of the town said they woke up to the sound of explosions and heavy weapons, and Uganda's People's Defense Force confirmed the attack but had few details. ATMIS says Al-Shabaab hit the base using car and suicide bombers, and that airborne reinforcement from the mission and its allies destroyed the militants' weaponry as they withdrew. ATMIS gave no details on casualties. However, Al-Shabaab claimed it killed 137 soldiers, but those numbers could not be confirmed. Reuters News quoted a Somali army captain saying the militants also targeted an adjacent base belonging to the Somali military. He reported a fierce battle for hours with heavy casualties on all sides. The United States government has proposed slashing its economic assistance to Tunisia next year while maintaining near current levels of security aid, as President Kais Saied continues to restrict his country's path to democratic governance. Tunisia's democratic backsliding has raised alarm in the U.S. Congress, where lawmakers from both parties have called on President Joe Biden's administration to exert its leverage to dissuade Saied from further anti-democratic steps. Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy, spoke about the U.S. proposal with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi.
Well, I think it's time that we realize that Issa Sayed is not listening to anybody. He has his own plan, his own vision, which is basically to establish a new dictatorship. And the statements that have been issued by Congress or by the administration have had basically zero effect on Issa Sayed for the past 2 years. Issa Sayed has ignored all of these appeals from the U.S., also from the European Union, calling them foreign interference and rejecting any foreign interference and stating that this is a matter of domestic politics and sovereignty. I mean, in fact, the U.S. and Congress have even gone further by reducing the military and economic assistance this year by almost 50% in the proposed budget. But Qais Saied still insists that he knows what's best for Tunisia and he's doing what supposedly the Tunisian people want. So I think that the U.S. and the international community must now stand with democracy and must defend democracy in Tunisia by cutting all assistance, both military and economic, to Tunisia. Both the U.S. and the European Union should cut all assistance to this regime, and they should keep only humanitarian assistance, which must go directly to the people in need in Tunisia. Similarly, the IMF should refuse to give the government of Tunisia any new loans until the government agrees to respect rule of law and to respect basic human rights, such as freedom of expression and organization, and respect the independence of the judicial system, without which there is no accountability and there is no transparency. Democracy is under attack in Tunisia, is in real and serious danger. And this is the time when Democrats throughout the world, especially in the United States and in Europe, must stand by the democratic norms, and the people who are struggling for freedom and democracy in Tunisia must defend the rule of law. And I believe this will impact not only the future of Tunisia, but also probably the entire Middle East and North Africa. So it is time for the international community to stand with Tunisian Democrats and to support democracy with more than just statements, but with real action.
But with the economic crisis in Tunisia, would all these measures taken by the international community and the United States hurt the Tunisian people?
Yes, we have to remember that the economic crisis has been getting worse since the coup. It has gotten much worse because Qais Saied has no idea, has no clear economic vision for developing Tunisia or solving the economic crisis. He even refuses to sign the IMF loan because he considers even the IMF loan as foreign interference. So I think that Qais Saied is leading Tunisia to an economic collapse as well as a political collapse and perhaps even a social collapse. He's a threat to stability and to the economy in Tunisia. And the only way that Tunisia can be saved is by either removing Qais Saied or forcing him to go back to national dialogue and to respecting the rule of law and the rule of democratic institutions elected by the people and accountable to the people. If the IMF gives him this money or the U.S. gives him this money, they will be only increasing the time and increasing the pain of the Tunisian people because the collapse will happen under Qais Saied anyways in 6 months or in a year or in 2 years. And it will be worse if it happens in longer term because the loan will be a bigger burden on the economy and a bigger burden on the Tunisian people. So that's why I believe that democracy is the solution. And that dictatorship is the problem, and giving money to dictators is not the solution. It doesn't solve the problem, it makes them worse.
That was Radwan Masmoudi, president of Center for the Study of Islam and Democracy, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Tunisian President Saied has said he dismissed parliament to break political stagnation that was contributing to the country's economic problems. He says he fired several dozen judges to fight corruption and has claimed his jailed opponents have caused rising prices and aim to destabilize the government. Witnesses say there is fierce fighting between rival Sudanese forces today in the western region of Darfur, although United States and Saudi Arabian observers noted improved respect for a fragile ceasefire now in its fourth day. The one-week truce is the latest in a series that were all violated with the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces accusing each other of more breaches this week. The U.S. and Saudi monitors reported particularly serious violations on Wednesday. The conflict, which erupted on April 15th, pits Sudan's de facto leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, against his former deputy, RSF commander, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. The conflict has killed nearly 2,000 civilians. The United Nations says more than 1 million people have been displaced within Sudan, while about 300,000 have fled to neighboring nations. In towns and cities, food, water, and power outages are widely reported. The International Committee of the Red Cross yesterday said it finally had been able to begin distributing aid to hospitals in Khartoum. The fighting in Sudan has destroyed hospitals and medical care in the country, and patients who fled the conflict are desperate for treatment. In the absence of medical aid, a Sudanese pharmacist who fled the country in recent weeks is doing what he can to help other refugees at a camp in neighboring Chad. Henry Wilkins reports from Kufaron, Chad.
A month ago, Mohammed Adam gathered what medicine he could when he heard the Janjaweed, an armed group known for killing civilians, was about to storm his hometown of Tindelti in West Darfur. He says he loaded the medicine on a horse-drawn cart and rode the kilometre or so across the border to neighbouring Chad. Since then, he has set up a makeshift pharmacy in Kafrun, a refugee site where about 10,000 people live. He says they are most in need of medicine for children because kids are getting sick with infections, diarrhea, coughing, and especially measles. He says most of his patients are children. He says he pays for the medicine his patients receive himself. Medina Ahmed Ishak has just arrived at the pharmacy seeking treatment for her baby, Abdul Razak. She says that Abdul Razak is sick with malaria and diarrhea, and that any food they had is now gone. They don't have enough to eat, yet she prays her son will one day grow up to be a doctor. Since Sudan's conflict began on April 15th, Chad and aid groups have struggled to provide enough food for refugees to eat. Medical aid is scarce too, according to refugees. Inside Sudan, the healthcare system has all but collapsed. This video purports to show a hospital in Khartoum gutted by the fighting. Others in the city are said to have been severely damaged, along with hospitals in West Darfur, where much fighting has taken place.
For basketball fans, the big day is almost here. Tomorrow, Senegal's AS Douanes takes on Al Ahly from Egypt in the finals of the Basketball Africa League. On Wednesday, AS Douanes shocked favorites Angola's Petro de Luanda 92-86. Al Ahly knocked out Mali's Stade Malien 78-73. After the game Wednesday, AS Douanes guard Jean-Jacques Boissy described his feelings.
I'm actually really, really happy, like, not just because of my performance, but because not offensively, but like defensively. Like I said this last interview, I was like, I wanted to guard the best player in every team. And like right now, I'm super proud of myself because I could like play good defense on Moraes or either solo. So I'm so happy about that. On the free throw line, I think like it's called free throw. So whenever I miss one, I'm even mad at myself. So I'll be like, it's easy points. I want to score. So I make sure I try to focus a lot and make them. And it was clutch and I had to make them.
Al Ahly shooting guard Ihab Amin says the team's experience will help it to be ready for tomorrow.
For us as a team, I think that's one of our advantages. We played a lot of finals with coach. We've been in these situations before. On the winning side and on the losing side, we just came from the finals of the Super League in Egypt like less than a week ago. All the games were very tough and very close, so I think we're a very close group. And even Nuni, Corey and Marco that haven't been us all year, came together with us, and I think that's a great advantage for us that we've been through a lot together.
Al Ahly and AS Douanes face off tomorrow in the BK Arena in Kigali, Rwanda at 1600 UTC. You'll be able to catch tomorrow's championship game on voaafrica.com and whatever you listen to VOA. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.